This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 6th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 163. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and the big deal feature. Daryl Plekis, the 39th Speaker of the British Columbia Legislative Assembly. When Plekis wasn't fighting corruption, keeping decorum in the legislature, or looking after his constituents in Abbotsford South, he was listening to British Columbians' advice on how to improve Parliament and how MLAs can communicate better with citizens. On this edition, outgoing Speaker Daryl Plekis talks about the release of his Speaker's Forum final report. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or are you also bracing for the pandemic roller coaster to continue through the vaccine rollout in Canada? Public health officials tease us with light at the end of the tunnel. The first doses of the vaccine from Pfizer and Moderna are coming in January, but this won't be smooth. These are the same public health officials who have given us mixed messages and kept so many secrets about their spending and the science behind their decisions. Canada is only getting 6 million doses in the first quarter, and that won't be enough to cover 6 million patients, if two doses are needed for each patient. Of course, every little bit helps to defeat the disease. If the rollout in early 2021 is handled as poorly as emergency preparation last year and emergency response this year, then hold on. A relatively small amount of people need a large amount of cocaine and heroin, but most humans will need a little bit of the vaccine. It means that the vaccine will be among the most valuable commodities on Earth in 2021. So it's no surprise that Interpol has warned police around the world to be on the lookout for organized crime. The US is poised to distribute vaccine faster than smug Canada, which means the poor folks stuck in Point Roberts, Washington, could be walking free across the border sooner than later. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the South China Morning Post, Hong Kong activists Joshua Wong, Ivan Lam, Agnes Chow jailed over 2019 Wan Chai Police Headquarters siege. One of Hong Kong's most prominent young political activists, Wong, 24, was jailed for more than 13 months for organizing a 15-hour siege of police headquarters at the start of last year's anti-government protests. Wong's high-profile comrade, Chow, 23, was sentenced to 10 months behind bars for her role in the same illegal protest, while their associate, Lam, 26, received 7 months. British Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab urged the authorities in Hong Kong and Beijing to end what he called a campaign to stifle opposition. Nine News Australia, wine producers' desperate plea after being hit with brutal trade tariffs from China. China imposed 212% tariffs on Australian wine just weeks after the country aired 14 grievances against Australia. The call comes after a global alliance of more than 200 MPs from 19 countries launched a campaign urging the world to buy Australian wine. Before you think China is getting into the Festivus mood, the 14 grievances were part of the latest salvo in a Cold War. The top of China's list was Australia's decision to ban Huawei from the 5G network down under. China is also unhappy that Australia sides with the US, speaks out on the concentration camps in Xinjiang, and is cracking down on China's foreign influence campaign. In the Japan Times, postponed Tokyo Olympics to cost extra $2.4 billion. Officials insist the massive event can go ahead next year even if the pandemic is not under control. But more spending on top of the previous budget of about $13 billion could further harden public opinion in Japan. Polls showed a majority of people think the games should be postponed again or canceled altogether. Tokyo 2020 said an additional $1.5 billion would be needed for operational costs related to the delay, with another $900 million in spending on coronavirus countermeasures. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Milwaukee's Kellogg Bowl closes after 58 years, blames coronavirus restrictions. The family-owned bowling alley is closing due to financial hardships brought on by the pandemic and state health restrictions. The Kellogg Bowl shut down in March, reopened in October, but was forced to close again due to Oregon Governor Kate Brown's latest lockdown orders. Portland area bowling alleys are fighting to stay afloat. Owners and bowlers rallied outside six alleys in October. In the Seattle Times, six rapid response teams being sent to short-staffed nursing homes in Washington state as COVID-19 surges again. In the past 2 weeks, the number of facilities with at least one active case of COVID-19 has increased by nearly 100. 431 long-term facilities have reported at least one COVID-19 infection. That's a huge increase from previous pandemic peaks in March and August, when about 280 long-term care facilities reported infections each of those months. In Czech news, we've been left with no option. Victoria Wonderland postponed indefinitely amid COVID-19 surge. The contactless, vehicle-only drive-thru experience at the Breakwater District at Ogden Point was a 25-minute, fully immersive experience made up of projections, animated lights, and video screens. The show was slated to run from December 7th to 31st. However, due to the latest restrictions from Dr. Bonnie Henry and Health Minister Adrian Dix, the event organizers say it will have to be postponed indefinitely. Victoria Wonderland was aiming at raising $60,000 for local charities. And these headlines this week in the Breaker.News. Richmond lawyer Hong Guo guilty of professional misconduct. Xi Jinping's top BC diplomat visits Meng Wanzhou on second anniversary of YVR arrest. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Our guest this week on the Big Deal feature is Daryl Plekis, who was the MLA for Abbotsford South for two terms. In his second term, from September 2017 to September 2020, Plekis was the Speaker of the British Columbia Legislative Assembly, the 39th Speaker in British Columbia's 148 years, and the most famous for being a catalyst for reform. Plekis found corruption by the clerk and the sergeant-at-arms and called in the police. He also started the Speaker's Forum, a series of roundtable meetings with British Columbians to hear ideas on how to improve BC's parliamentary system. The Speaker's Forum brought together groups of Indigenous people, political scientists, youth, teachers, former MLAs, and the media for meetings in 2018 and 2019. The Year 2 and final reports were published on December 3rd on the legislature's website. Daryl, why did you start this?
Well, you know, one of the things that was fairly apparent to me from the moment I started in elected office, that there was all kinds of things that we ought to be doing differently to enhance our ability to be more representative of the people we serve. How can we do those things in a more efficient way? How can we have greater input from the general public? You know, it's everything from what MLAs can do in their constituency offices to the kinds of things that we can do in the House and the way we do business at the legislature to give people more value for our offices. The kinds of ideas that people came up with, as you'll know from the report, it's a very long list of things that people are saying need to be changed. Something which is for me important, because these aren't really my recommendations for reform, certainly not. They're simply the recommendations of a collection of people who we think are fairly representative of British Columbians, who have some interest in seeing change, positive change. And it's them, people like yourselves, who are suggesting one thing or another. And of course, not everybody's going to agree along the way. I'm sure you all have looked at things in that list and said, wow, that ain't going to happen for a long time, or how would that be feasible? But, you know, we always want to be respectful of every single person's point of view. And at the end of the day, it's all about whether or not somebody sees these as things that we ought to do or not, that at very least they should be on the table for discussion. In terms of how people behave in the House, for example, during question period, all of the antics that go on there, people pounding on their desks and being interrupt of being disrespectful. And so, you know, do we really need that? How helpful is that to advancing debate? And I think there's also in there, importantly, attention to the whole matter of accountability. Like, you know, what do we have that ensures people are held accountable? And of course you could say, well, we have election day, because that's one good indicator. You're either in or you're out. But there's all kinds of things that can happen along the way to ensure that people at least have a comfort zone that there is accountability, a comfort zone that there's transparency. Again, I'm so happy that these individuals contributed their time. And as you know, being one of the participants, it was all volunteer.
I was honored to be part of the November 2019 session to talk about public engagement from the media point of view, about access from the media point of view, and what the media needs in this modern day and age, but also basics. Suggestions such as term limits, town hall meetings in each constituency, more transparency, less partisanship, to empower committees, and also to release in-camera minutes. A lot of things that could be done pretty easily, but in many ways do require a bit of a culture shift.
Yeah, I would say that. I think you hit the nail right on the head there, Bob. Like, I think there needs to be a fundamental shift that underlies it all in terms of thinking of how we do business. Now, of course, for me and my background coming from a university, I look at it and say it's a no-brainer, right? Because, you know, it's all about, you know, making sure that everybody has a voice, and we value as academics taking every single position into account. And that's just not the way, as you know, politics tends to work. And I think it's, you know, there's a tendency on the part of media to do things in sort of an adversarial kind of way, like it's looking for issues or creating issues, as opposed to saying, well, look, how can we be helpful? So we would say in academia, if we have differences of opinion, I would say to the person I disagree with, how can I help you with your argument? Because it may well be that gives me a better understanding of what you're trying to say. And maybe I've got lots to learn by listening harder. And I'm not sure that we do that. It's this win-lose culture that we have in politics. And I'm not saying that there isn't a place for people, or there's a need for parties, because, you know, certainly there's a strong case to be made for why that's absolutely necessary, and why it's so difficult if someone isn't part of a party. But I think it sort of tips over the edge when we have party for the party. It's you know, it takes precedent over every single thing, rather than say that we have responsibilities as elected officials to have with us at all times a sense of social responsibility, which means, even though, you know, for example, when people talk about the environment and what's going up in the Arctic or whatever, no, I'm not directly affected necessarily, some people might argue, but that's still my responsibility. It's my response. We all have to be citizens of, we're citizens of British Columbia, we're citizens of Canada, we're citizens of the world. And we have to always have a mindset that reflects a concern for every single person. We can never be making decisions where we're in any way being hurtful to other people. What most people don't know is that virtually none of these things were in place before I got there. You say to yourself, how on earth did that ever happen? What was going on that people weren't paying attention to the need for change? And I would say one of my experiences as speaker has been that it's one of the most very difficult aspects of the job is experiencing the resistance to change. So here we have a speaker's forum, you know, by all of these people who are giving their view from outside. And you will know from your participation in it, these were some pretty incredible people with some pretty incredible ideas. The plan originally was to go 4 years. And of course, my term didn't go 4 years, but it probably wouldn't have made any difference anyway, because we got hampered with COVID. And that, you know, hurt our ability to all come together, all participants, for a final shot at, you know, hey, now let's actually get some action to putting these things in place. So now we're in a situation where it's left to, again, the people in the next parliament. And I sincerely hope that they connect back with all of these participants and others and can continue the process. Again, I think that will be a telltale sign, because there is no one, I think, who could look at this collection of recommendations, and again, not coming from me, but coming from others, and not say that there are not things in there that are easy to do and should be implemented as soon as possible.
The Deputy Speaker, Raj Chauhan, is now the designate to become the Speaker in the next Parliament, which opens on December 7th. What next for the Speaker's Forum, and what next for you?
Right. Well, I'd say for the Speaker's Forum, one thing I want to say, and I mean this in the most nonpartisan way, I'm a huge fan of the Premier in terms of his approach. I really do believe he's a very genuine person. And I think most people would say that about him, even though you might, whatever you think about political persuasions, a very decent person. And I think that first and foremost is important for a premier. And Raj is a wonderful person. I'm confident that Raj is going to be doing real justice to that role. I mean, hopefully he doesn't have to go through all the kinds of things I went through. I'm optimistic about what he's going to do, but I'm also mindful that, you know, when I say, you know, I have great respect for the capacity of the Premier and the capacity of the Speaker, I'm also very mindful, given my own experience, that there are only two people. There's a lot of other people that have to be playing a part and playing it in a way which is helpful to all British Columbians. And I think we always have to remember, like, people can say they are, but certainly my experience is there's a huge difference between people saying they're going to do something and saying they're committed and actually doing it. The acid test is let's see some action. You know, in terms of where I'm, what I'm likely to do in the future, I'm just not sure. I'm sort of going to spend some time just to be thinking about it. One of the things I really don't want to do is I'm not ready to retire. You know, I'm reading all this stuff that says people who don't retire, you know, live the longest. The five places in the world, apparently, where people live the longest are the people who are at work when they die. So I'm feeling fairly optimistic. I mean, you know, I've still got things I'm waiting on. As you know, I'm still waiting for police to finish their activity. And I think that's going to be a significant change, you know, when that's finished. But we'll have to see. I think I'm, you know, perhaps there's many people out there on the political side who would say, you know, don't go anywhere near that guy, because he's going to be, you know, doing things in the future, which is, you know, if I would, like, if there's something where I think there's an opportunity for change, there's a need for change, you know, I'm going to be doing it. I think that causes a lot of people to be uncomfortable. So I certainly wouldn't expect that I would be doing anything that was at the blessing of any government. I'm not thinking that for a minute. Of course, I'm, you know, still a professor emeritus and am until the day I die at the university. So, you know, I will do as I've done while I was in office. I still do professor-like things like research, write, and that kind of thing. So I'm optimistic. I mean, and, you know, I know we're all right now, we're not feeling very good about what's going on, you know, with the virus crisis, but I'm optimistic. You know, it's been an awful year, 2020, but I'm feeling very good about 2021 and beyond.
That was Daryl Plekis, who was the MLA for Abbotsford South for two terms and British Columbia's 39th Speaker of the Legislative Assembly.
To you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to members of British Columbia's Hong Kong, Taiwan, Mongolian, and Uyghur communities ahead of World Human Rights Day on December 10th. Don't give up hope in your quest to shine a light on China's human rights abuses. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. When your face is gone, you won't stand alone. We'll all stand together, cause this is our home. And it don't matter what color you are, cause love will conquer hate. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 6th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on December 6th in 1933, U.S. Judge John Woolsey ruled James Joyce's Ulysses was not pornographic. Therefore, it was not obscene and it could be sold in the USA. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. All I Want for Christmas Is You by the YVR Pop Choir. Find it on Chorus Studio on YouTube. Until next week.